Welcome to the 96th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney and I'm your host. Welcome. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Happy Veterans Day. Last week I spoke of team, and to me, the good old USA and our veterans are the true team of America. The military is unrelentless in keeping us safe. I like to remember all those who served and to thank them. I think there's nothing better than to have served our country. I suspect if I have one regret in life, it would have been that I didn't serve my country in the military. If I had to do it all over again, I think I would. My father served in the Navy. My uncle served in the Army. And for girls, you know, it wasn't that big of, wasn't that popular way back when. But I think I truly would have loved serving my country in uniform. But I certainly respect all those that have. And I've run the Marine Corps Marathon 3 times. And it just brings a tear to your eye when you come up and see Arlington Cemetery. A friend, Sal Ramirez, that's buried there. And I'm sure a lot of people probably listening have loved ones buried there. The other thing that's so fantastic about the Marine Corps Marathon is seeing all the troops handing out the medals and participating. They look so young, I guess, especially to me at this age, but I can't help but respect them and admire them. Perhaps this has been a stressful week for some, or maybe a hard week for others. Certainly we all had our favorite candidates over the week, but in the end, we're all part of the good old USA, and we need to go forward together. I was raised to believe that through hard work, everything will work out and be fine. And, you know, this was demonstrated to me by my grandparents and my parents over and over again. So I guess I feel a kind of calm that as long as I do my part and do the best that I can, things will work out just the way they're supposed to. So I hope you all are getting over the stressfulness of the week, and we can go on as a team unified and each doing our part to make this place a little better for those who follow. I mean, who would think that a girl from West Virginia would become a physician, turn it all on its ear, and become a practitioner of a plant-based lifestyle, exercise, runner, backyard gardener. So we never know where this world will take us, but, try to always enjoy the journey. I think that's why, you know, plant-based nutrition is so new, so unique. I love educating people on the ability for us to take control of our own health. And, you know, it goes beyond all barriers. We humans have the opportunity to feed ourselves in such a way that we can remain very healthy or become very sick. And the reality is, for most people, there aren't any physical barriers except for being educated on what is the proper nutrition and the desire and belief to change if need be. Certainly, there are places where people have difficulties in obtaining food, and I'm not denying that there's not malnutrition and starvation even in this great country. But that's where we all need to stand together and help one another. I love when I listen to podcasts when people are starting urban gardens and inner city gardens and school gardens to help educate people, because, you know, I really do think that's the way from the ground roots for us to be able to change and become a healthier nation. It's not going to be imposed upon us through government, but it's something that we need to educate ourselves and then educate each other and be supportive of each other so that we can all become healthy. I'm not going to accept the excuse that I don't have time or I'm too busy in order to make a meal or feed myself or do proper nutrition if you understand what to do. So I think, you know, it's my job to encourage, but perhaps maybe be a little stern in the fact that we do need to take control and take the time to take care of our own health through nutrition first before we do any of the other activities of our lives. That being said, November is Diabetes Month, and diabetes hits home for me because it runs rampant in my family. I've probably said on this podcast before that, you know, both grandmothers had diabetes. My parents have diabetes. My grandmother's died of cardiovascular complications of diabetes. So it really hits home. And it's been something that I've wanted to avoid my whole life. I thought that running would keep me thin and perhaps, you know, avoid it. But the reality of it is nutrition plays a huge role in preventing diabetes. The statistics of diabetes are alarming. 20 million Americans have been diagnosed with adult onset diabetes. That has increased threefold since 1990, which is huge. And, you know, we argue as physicians and educators on what has caused the increase. But certainly you can look around and see that the obesity epidemic has played a huge role. When my grandmother had diabetes, she took a pill for it and was told that as long as her sugars, or she didn't have urine, or she, I'm sorry, that she didn't have sugar in her urine, that things would probably be okay. And that couldn't be further from the truth. And today we give people medications and it progresses from pills to insulin injection to other kinds of injections to halt our glucose from being manufactured or increase the insulin production of our system, but it really never reverses diabetes. So people collect medications and they also start to collect side effects. Diabetes is related to 50,000 cases of kidney failure a year resulting in dialysis. It is associated with 75,000 cases of lower leg amputation. It causes vision loss in 650,000 people a year, and it's directly associated with 75,000 deaths a year. That is phenomenal. I ran my first marathon in Rome, Italy, as a part of the American Diabetes Association team to raise money to find a cause for adult onset diabetes. Now I know the cause of diabetes and I know how to cure it. We don't need any more money. We just need to change our diets. Oftentimes people are diagnosed with what's called pre-diabetes. It means that their sugar's a little elevated. There was a study in the New England Journal of Medicine looking at men that's glucose was just 100, which we consider normal. But those people with a glucose of 100 within the next year or two were almost had a very high incidence of becoming diabetics. If we look at elevated insulin levels and elevated hemoglobin A1Cs over 5.5, these are what we call pre-diabetes people. They have all the same side effects as diabetics. They can get kidney disease, eye disease, peripheral vascular disease, coronary artery disease. And oftentimes people present with cardiovascular complications of diabetes that they didn't even know they had. Because for the most part, people are asymptomatic from diabetes for a long time. The first symptoms of diabetes can be you're very thirsty, and then you always have to use the bathroom a lot. So we call it polydipsia polyuria, meaning you drink a lot and you pee a lot. Those are the symptoms that we ask people when we do a yearly physical exam. But the reality is, by the time people have those symptoms, they're well on their way to starting to get complications. Adult onset diabetes was called type 2 diabetes or adult onset diabetes for many years. Now we're starting to see it even in children. Previously, juvenile diabetes was type 1 diabetes, which is a different disease in that the pancreatic cells fail and children no longer produce insulin and they require insulin to maintain their glucose. But now because of childhood obesity, we're seeing children, even before their teenage years, developing adult onset diabetes. 70 to 80% of children that are obese will be obese as adults. They have all the increased risk of lifestyle diseases as well. So, you know, how do we look at obesity? You know, the big thing we look at is body mass index. And a quick way to look at that is to take your weight in pounds and divide it by 703. And then take that number and divide it by 2 times your height in inches. So the normal ideal BMI is 18.5 to 24.5. Overweight individuals have a BMI of 25 to 29.9. Obese is greater than that. One of the largest studies in North America looked at different diets and the BMI. And what they found was that meat eaters had an average BMI of 28.8. Flexitarians, which ate a little bit of meat and fish on occasion, had a BMI of 27.3. Pesco vegetarians, who ate some fish, had a BMI average of 26.3. Vegetarians who ate eggs and dairy had a BMI of 25.7. And vegans, on average, had a BMI of 23.6. Now, that doesn't mean to say that there aren't meat eaters that are slim and there aren't vegans that are fat. But if you look at all the ways to eat in this world, the safest way is to eat plant-based. If a child is obese, their life expectancy may be cut 20 years. 90% of diabetics are overweight. So you see, we can't wait for the kids to develop diabetes. We have to do something now. And it's not okay to ignore it. We need to change our children's nutrition early on. And, you know, over and over, I have people come into the office and they have, you know, the kids are the reason why they can't, or that they've fallen off the wagon, or they, you know, there's so much problem with, you know, converting to a whole food plant-based diet because the kids are picky or they don't want to eat it. That's where the parents have to learn to educate the kids on what a good diet is and what their risks are if they don't eat a good diet. Kids aren't going to eat poison. They're not going to eat something that's going to harm them. They have to understand that by eating the wrong things, they can be harmed. There was a study done in California with 89,000 people, and they looked at different diets and the risk of decrease, or the ability to decrease your risk of diabetes. And they noted in flexitarians that ate meat one time per week, they decreased their diabetes risk of 28%. If they only ate fish, they decreased their diabetes by 50%. If they didn't eat animal products, they decreased their risk by 61%. If they went further and eliminated dairy and eggs as well, they had a 78% decrease in diabetes. So, you know, it just goes to show you that, again, plant-based nutrition is going to help. You know, not all fat is created equal. There's saturated fat mainly in meat, dairy, and eggs. And, you know, we often talk of protein as being meat, but you don't get one or the other. When you eat meat, you get protein and fat. And most of that is fat is saturated in the form of palmitate. And that's been associated with an increased risk of diabetes, especially as noted above. Monounsaturated fats in nuts, seeds, avocados may actually be protective because of their associated phytonutrients and antioxidants. There was a study done where they looked at just bean consumption, and they had the one group take 5 cups of beans a week. They were all overweight individuals. And the second group, they asked them to just try to cut their calories by 500 a day. The group that ate 5 cups of beans that remained the same weight had better glucose control than those who tried to cut their calories by 500 calories a day. And I see it over and over again in my office that people are really, really trying to cut their calories. I had a lady today, I asked her what she ate. You know, I ask, as you hear every week, I ask my patients, what did you have for dinner last night? I didn't have any dinner. What did you have for lunch? I had cereal. Oh, yes, I remember I had a banana. So you only had cereal and a banana yesterday. Yes, that's it. Well, she's overweight and she's gained 5 pounds since the last time I saw her. So I confronted her. I said, you know, you can't eat a banana and cereal and gain weight. So am I right in saying that some days you really overeat and the next days you try to really undereat to try to compensate for that? And she smiled and said, yes, she was. It's not that she's lying to me or that she's, you know, not trying. But truly, she realized that she overate one day and that she was going to try to compensate for it the next day. But what happens in that vicious cycle is the next day, again, results in overeating, and the weight loss is negligible. And actually end up gaining weight because she was hungry the next day. Dr. McDougall said it's not the, you know, diabetes is not sugar, and it's, that's been proven that it's not sugar. It's the ability for our muscles to use the sugar, and it's basically a result of the fat we eat and the fat we wear. And so the fat actually blocks the glucose from getting into the cell and blocks the receptor. So when people lose weight by any means, it will improve their diabetes control. The idea is to prolong that and again, to give people the most nutrients possible. But the other thing is that saturated fat is actually toxic to the beta cells that produce insulin directly. So if the process of adult onset diabetes goes that our receptors are intolerant, our receptors don't work, and so we have excess glucose, so we need excess insulin produced by the pancreatic cells, the beta cells. So the beta cells are overproducing insulin as much as they possibly can, a factory putting out as much product as they possibly can until they start to fail, all because of the fat we eat and the fat we wear. On top of that, the fat we eat is directly toxic to the beta cells, so we actually start to lose beta cells, not only because they become wore out, but because they're actually being poisoned. And so the time people are diagnosed with full-onset diabetes, they have, may have lost 50% of their beta cells. In tests where people were given fat, or we looked at insulin response, to fat, saturated fat will impair insulin secretion and the insulin action within hours of ingesting the saturated fat. In people that have a genetic predisposition to diabetes, they're even more at risk. The good news is that with weight loss and glucose control, your body can actually regenerate the beta cells. That was something that at one time we thought was not possible. We thought once people were on insulin, then game over, those beta cells were never going to regenerate. But if you have degeneration of beta cells from adult onset diabetes and basically poisoning of those cells, you can regenerate eating a whole food plant-based diet. Often in my nutrition class, people ask me, well, just how much meat or how much dairy can I get away with and still be okay? And there was actually a study done in Taiwan looking at 4,000 people, and the men were allowed to eat meat two or three times a week, and the women were asked to eat meat only one day a week. Those people that had a reduction in their meat, the men had a 50% lower incidence of diabetes as opposed to those eating meat every day, and the women had a 75% lower incidence of diabetes as opposed to the women eating meat every day. They couldn't compare to people that didn't eat any meat at all because there was absolutely no incidence of diabetes in people that didn't eat meat. Well, what other things cause diabetes by overeating and being obesity? And being obese? Pollutants. There was a Harvard study looking at hexachlorobenzene as a direct risk for diabetes. So you say, where was hexachlorobenzene found? Well, I was a chemistry major, and I was always afraid of benzene compounds because they were told to be very carcinogenic and very dangerous. So we had hoods and masks and gloves and everything else to try to, you didn't want to inhale that stuff. But where are they found? They're found in the grocery store and canned foods. And one of the biggest sources is actually sardines and canned salmon. But then even if you look at farm salmon, it has 10 times the PCBs and toxins that wild salmon have. These chemical stores, these chemicals are directly toxic to our beta cells and increase the risk of diabetes. And they are actually stored in the fat of the fish. And then when we eat the fish, they're stored in our fat. If you lose weight, you'll actually get rid of those toxic chemicals. But if you don't, they can actually stay in your fat for up to 75 years. So that's kind of a scary thought. So you kind of want to avoid storing these bad chemicals in your body because only bad things can happen. One of the biggest and most frequent complications of diabetes is peripheral neuropathy. And if you turn on the TV, you'll see multiple ads for medications to treat nerve pain. You know, there's the classic one on with the trumpet player that has nerve pain and he starts to take a medication and it gets better. Well, there was a great study looking at a plant-based diet, and regression of diabetic neuropathy with a total vegan diet. And this was in 1994 in the Journal of Nutritional Medicine. And what they did was put people on a whole food plant-based diet, and within 4 days, they had improvement of their diabetic neuropathy. The side effects of this study was that they had much better control of their diabetes, they had weight loss, their cholesterol improved, their blood pressure went down, and up to 75% reversal in the diabetic neuropathy early on. 80% of them were able to get off their diabetic medications. And this was done in 1994, well before these medications were put on the market. So which would you rather do? Change your diet to a whole food plant-based diet, or take a medication that has a list of side effects, your arm length, you know, the length of your arm, that's not even addressing the, you know, so our medications are always directed, it seems like, to the end result. So in diabetic neuropathy, it's nerve pain. Well, why are we having nerve pain? And people looked, well, if you put somebody on a plant-based diet, does it regenerate nerves, or does it cause a change in neurological function or perception? It doesn't have anything to do with the nerves at all. It has to do with the small little blood vessels that are feeding the capillaries that are feeding these tiny little nerves that are causing so much pain. If we get vasodilatation or enlargement of these little blood vessels, we're actually supplying these peripheral nerves with the nourishment that they need, and hence the pain goes away. And I actually experienced this in my class, you know, and I actually have now several times where the diabetic nerve pain largely goes away on a whole food plant-based diet very quickly in just the, you know, the few sessions. You know, our classes are 6 sessions. They were every other week. Now they're every week, but people are seeing improvement in their neuropathy, you know, very quick. And these are people that, you know, they aren't 100% plant-based, most of them. While they're going through the class. But, you know, when they hear this, this is another reason to become whole food plant-based. I know that when I gave up oil, I no longer had reflux, and now I'll avoid oil at any cost. And that is a much more benign condition than nerve pain and neuropathy that keeps people from sleeping, that keeps people from walking. And if you could make that go away with changing your diet, why wouldn't you? Somebody just has to educate these people that this is the simple solution. You know, it's kind of funny. You see more and more do-it-yourself projects online and on Facebook, and, you know, 101 ways to clean something with you know, ordinary ingredients like vinegar and baking soda. And people are all excited about, you know, taking out stains and making things clean without using toxic chemicals. But plant-based nutrition is like a well-kept secret. Nobody's preaching it, you know, that, hey, this is a great do-it-yourself way to reverse diabetes, or do-it-yourself way to reverse peripheral neuropathy, or do-it-yourself way to prevent heart disease. I mean, how cool is that? Let's see, it doesn't cost very much and there are no side effects. Great idea. You know, often people are, you know, saying that, you know, I would lose weight if I could only exercise. But the reality of it is, with diabetes, between the diabetic neuropathy and the peripheral vascular disease in the blood vessel, the blood vessel's inability to dilate when they exert themselves, they really don't feel like exercising. Exercising is not very fun. And the studies have actually been done where they looked at people's arteries with diabetes when they exercise, and instead of normally dilating so you get more blood vessels, more blood flow to your legs, they actually constrict for a fairly long time before they finally start to dilate. So people with diabetes, it takes a long time to warm up, and so there's a significant amount of discomfort before they ever get to the point of being comfortable with exercise. And so it's kind of a negative feedback. You know, we say that people aren't going to change their diet if the food doesn't taste good, but people certainly aren't going to exercise if it hurts for the majority of the time. And even studies with runners, you know, and people always slow down before they absolutely have to. And there's various reasons for it. But one of the biggest reasons is you just get tired of tolerating the pain and you slow down. So if you apply that to diabetes, that they just get tired of dealing with the pain, they're going to slow down or not exercise. So it's really hard to get out the door. you know, that said, you know, I encourage it as much as possible. But by changing to a plant-based diet first and getting rid of some of this neuropathy and increasing the blood flow, it makes things a whole lot more pleasant. And again, people's moods start to change, and they're going to want to get out and do things. I had a patient this week that I'm really proud of. He went through the course, he and his wife. He's lost a significant amount of weight. He has diabetes, coronary artery disease, a bypass, peripheral vascular disease. And he came in, and you know, he's very encouraged that he's lost the weight. He feels good. He's getting off his diabetic medications almost completely. He started to exercise now, and he actually has the desire that he wants to start to run. Now, this is a guy that actually had back surgery for disc disease, which we know a lot of times is because of the blood supply to the vertebral body starts to shrink and the disc gets squeezed. So he's had big back surgery with fusion, and he still wants to run. And I think it's possible. You know, we have to get him walking first. We have to get, you know, things, you know, the peripheral vascular and these greens. And, you know, we talked about making sure that he's eating them four times a day so that he's getting a lot of blood flow when he goes out to exercise. And, you know, so I hope someday I'll be reporting that, you know, he started to run. I guess while I'm on my feel-good stories, you know, my class runs for six sessions, and now I'm doing them every week, a session, and then we start another class. And, you know, the holiday's coming up, and we're not filled for the next session's class just yet. So I reached out to a doctor's office that I had spoken with, to see if, you know, they would like, and so specifically an eye doctor, to see if they would like to participate and send some of their patients my way to help with their, you know, their nutrition. And a funny thing happened was that one of the staff members was friends with another patient that had done the word, and he's working on the guy to come to the class. You know, that he has all these risk factors. He said, you know, hey, you'll get a lot of help and you'll feel good. And they were commenting on him saying, you know, man, this guy looks great. He's happy. He's you know, he said, I never thought I'd be the last guy in the world to adopt a whole food plant-based diet. Yet here I am. And he's successful. And he's come off medications. And so he's encouraging others. And so what a great way to pay this forward. You know, and it turns out to be a really small world that, you know, and so one person leads to another. And it just made me feel good that he was out spreading the word. And hopefully we can get more people to get off their medications and improve their quality of life. I'd like to change notes and congratulate Josh LaJohnny, who's been interviewed on this podcast, for winning the cover of Running World magazine for his accomplishments as a runner athlete in his weight loss journey. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. Please get a copy of Runner's World magazine and read about Josh's story and check out the podcast that I did with him. I've actually interviewed him twice. You know, he's such a lighthouse. And now he's becoming, he's become an accomplished marathon runner and an ultra runner. And, you know, listening to his story and watching, you know, some of his feeds on Facebook, I started to reflect on marathon running and, you know, why do I do it? And, you know, there's multiple reasons for doing marathons. You know, it's the challenge to be put to a test. You know, at this stage in the game, I'm pretty sure that I can finish a marathon. I have one December the 3rd in California. You know, I'm not going to win it. I'm not going to win my age group, most likely. I'm not, especially there. But the reason for doing it is just to kind of be out there for what happens and how I react to whatever happens to me. You know, it's a huge head game. I used to golf, and, you know, golf is a big head game as far as if you get into trouble, you have to get out somehow. And marathon running is the same. You know, it's very rarely that you're going to run a marathon and everything's going to go right and you're going to feel good the whole way around. But it's how you react to those different things and how you assess your body along the way and how you pace yourself. So it's a puzzle that I enjoy trying to figure out. You know, it's what stupid thing might I do and what am I going to do? You know, I mean, and I've done so many that, you know, my staff often wonders, you know, what stupid thing I'm going to do this time, you know, whether it's buy a powder that's going to not cause you to get blisters, but really causes you to get blisters in your shoes and your socks. You know, I sat down in the backfield of the Kentucky Derby Marathon, and I'm laughing to myself with a blister that if I'd have been as a horse and I sat down or I went down in the backfield of the Kentucky Derby Marathon, you know what would have happened. They would have brought the truck and blocked their view and taken me off in the back of the truck, not breathing. You know, I've put on new socks and new shoes, which you should never do. I've tried new drinks that you know you shouldn't do. I've went out too fast and got into trouble. I even fell down at the start of the Marine Corps Marathon and tripped on a garbage bag, and I had bloody knees. And when I came along to mile 10 and my daughter was there, the first thing they noticed was, you know, my bloody knees. But the reality of it is, if you fall down the beginning of a marathon and there's 10,000 people behind you, you don't take too much time to look at your bloody knees. So, you know, I mean, there's just so many funny stories that come out of it. And, you know, after it's all said and done, you survive it and you have this war story to tell. So it's always great. There's also the accountability. If I sign up to do a marathon, that means that I'm going to take time off to go to the marathon and probably do a little vacation around it if it's a destination. And then I also have to train. You might sign up for a 5K and make your way through it, but you really can't cram for a marathon. You need to train. And, you know, sometimes you train better than others. And most of the time during the marathon, you wished you trained more or trained smarter or other things you wish you would have done. But certainly, you know, you go in there trained about as best as you can for the time. And, you know, sometimes at mile 22, when you're walking and running and struggling, you feel a little bit good. And, you know, when you look over and you see a 25-year-old guy that's also walking and running because they thought it was going to be so easy and, you know, and they're young and they can tolerate anything. But, you know, it does start to hurt at mile 20. So it kind of brings everybody to a equal playing field. There's no better way to see a city than running 26 miles through it. Most marathon courses will take you a pretty good view around the city. And of course, you're there before and after and trying to find the expo. So you get a nice tour of the city and different places around it. And, you know, over the years, I've enjoyed taking my family and my daughter and you know, we've traveled and sightseed before and after. And, you know, during the marathon, you're not leaving your family too long. So it's not that big of a burden. But perhaps the biggest reason for running the marathon, I think, is the social aspect or the team aspect. You know, I talk a lot about team, being the plant-based team, being the good old USA team. But, you know, as humans, we're part of this pack and part of this team. And when I first started running marathons, I signed up for all the giant ones, you know, Chicago, New York, where there were thousands and thousands of people. And it was, you know, standing on the start line with, you know, 45,000 of your closest friends all bunched up together. This is running with the pack thing that was always very exciting. And then it got down to be, you know, it was kind of fun running with about 100 of your favorite friends, and you can spread out and, you know, maybe get to talk to somebody. But I think that the biggest social aspect is actually running with your friends. And, you know, sometimes it's, you know, the training hours with your friends, and nothing to break down barriers if you're out on the road and nothing else to do but talk for hours on end. You can't help but bond with people. But some of the fondest memories actually come right before the marathon, when you're at the expo or, you know, the dinners before or after, or the travel before or after. And, you know, I still smile and laugh when I think of certain things that have happened at the expo. And if any of my friends are listening, there's, you know, one particular funny episode that happened at an expo with a dog that I laugh at to this day. And, you know, it's just it makes me smile, and it's memories that I have forever. And I also have the memories with my family. And, you know, now, you know, I've drugged my daughter to these marathons over the year, and now, you know, she's run several half marathons and a whole marathon. She actually even got engaged after her first whole marathon. So it's glad to pass something on to her. As far as being, you know, an activity that she can do the rest of her life. Not all the moments are good during a marathon. There's been some dark moments. But, you know, they always become funny afterwards. Before I was plant-based, you know, I had too much dairy before a marathon, and that was a very difficult Marine Corps marathon. But afterwards, you know, we all laughed about, you know, what happened. And, you know, for years to come, you have those memories. So I think it's, you know, it's a great but crazy thing. And I'm inspired. I'm inspired by everybody around me. And, you know, at this time where people talk about divisiveness of our country, you know, go run a marathon if you want to not be divided. The whole place is positive and pulling for each other. Strangers are cheering for strangers. People on the streets are encouraging others just for the encouraging of this, just for the sake of encouraging another human. And everybody's happy. And, you know, I had a friend go to a marathon and stay with my daughter one time while while I was running. And it was her first marathon. And she described it as like one of the most positive experiences that she had ever been to. You know, everybody was happy. There were throngs and people in crowd, but there was no fighting. There was no people up. People weren't upset. They were cheering, you know, cheering. So, you know, it's just a nice. And, you know, the volunteers even are happy to serve. You know, you got these people and the weather could be crappy and they're handing out drinks, sticky Gatorade drinks and water and gooey things, and the runners are sticky and sweaty, and there's orange slices, and they're all happy, and they're having a great time. They dress up in costume. They compete with each other to see who could be the best costume. So, I mean, it's just such a positive experience and positive day that, you know, all your problems go away. You spend the day outside playing. And, yeah, there's a little bit of pain, but you don't remember that very much at all. And if you do, you just laugh about how everybody's limping afterwards. So, you know, I encourage just about anybody to go ahead and sign up for a marathon and, you know, work your way up to one. You know, maybe not sign up for one right away. Work your way from 5K to 10K to half marathon. But it's doable by anyone. The New York City Marathon, you can look on YouTube. There was a finisher that was a World War II vet at 96 years of age. He finished in 17 hours and something. I may have the time, you know, messed up. Well after the clock was stopped and well after the official timing, you know, had ceased. But he finished it, and he finished it just because he could. And, you know, if he can do it, if you see people of all shapes and sizes running the marathon, it's just a great thing, and it's a great thing to do with your friends. You know, it doesn't matter if you're fast or you're slow. I just think it's a great journey to undertake. And if you don't run a turkey trot, that's always a good place to start. It's coming up in a couple of weeks, so that can be your first 5K, get you going, or just go out with your family and have a run and start a tradition. Nothing better. As far as my backyard life and my garden, things are coming along. Broccoli's been planted, eggplant's been planted, tomatoes, carrots, Swiss chard's coming up, potatoes are still there and blooming. I've got papayas on a couple different trees, so I'm all excited. It's just fun times in the backyard. You know, again, I like to go back and go in the backyard every afternoon or evening and water and check things out and see how things have progressed. And it's a great time being out in the backyard. You just don't think about anything else besides gardening, and it's a kind of a meditative in the moment spot. So if you don't have a garden, think about putting some plants in somewhere. I know if you live up north, it's getting chilling, so you can't do much this time of year, but still fresh herbs are great. You know, cilantro is very good for you as far as inflammation. Oregano, same thing, diabetes control, inflammation. And the antioxidants associated with fresh herbs are very similar to kale and other greens. We just don't eat as much of them. Tomorrow I'll be speaking at Richard's Customer Appreciation Day in Sarasota, Florida. at the Robarts Arena. So that should be good to see all the plant-based people up there and pass along the eat plant strong and eat whole foods and take care of your health. My classes are still going. The next class will start up December the 8th, run right before Christmas. So in class, we've been talking more and more about the eating season of Thanksgiving and Christmas, because that's kind of when it all falls apart for a lot of people. You start having company and the traditions of the holidays, which are not usually plant-based, but are usually full of bad, sweet, fattening, high-saturated foods. So the idea will be to help people make that transition as much as possible. We've talked about mashed potatoes and mushroom gravy. How do you make that? Sweet potatoes, lima beans, stuffing balls that aren't associated with a turkey, things called a field roast, and that you can put on the table, but how to entertain, how to talk to your family, how to take a covered dish for Thanksgiving, and that it's okay not to eat the turkey. So it's a process, and it's coming along, and we're making our way, and then we'll transition into Christmas, and, you know, there's sweets at Christmas. My grandmother was a big baker at Christmas time, making a lot of cookies for people and having a lot of sweets around, so I've learned to make those plant-based now and actually make a lot of those without much in the way of oil, so it's a good time to learn about those things, that you can look forward to eating fun things and but they're also still be healthy. I made a cheese ball for Halloween that, you know, was with cashews, macadamia nuts, and sun-dried tomatoes. I've been making some crackers that are with nuts and seeds without any added oil. So they're not perfect in the way of, you know, if you certainly could overeat on those, so because nuts and seeds are very high calorie, but they're certainly better than buying things that have a lot of extra processed oil in them. So for special occasions, those are something to have around. Keep January 21st in mind. Come down and visit us in Port Charlotte, Florida for the second annual nutrition conference with Dr. Michael Clapper and Timory Hagerberger. It's going to be a great day with breakfast and lunch and cooking demonstrations, so feel free to join us. Check out my website at drdelaney.com. For information on these things and other things. I'm trying to post some recipes on there as well. I'm on Instagram. I try to post a lot of what I eat on there, if I can get a good picture. You can find me at jamiedelaney@gmail.com, and it's jamiedulaney@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook as well. I don't post that much on there. Lately, the most things I post is, you know, my push-up challenge, and I think I'm on day 65. Today, I managed to do 50 push-ups. It's actually the first time I've ever done 50 push-ups without stopping. Now, the last 10 were not good push-ups, but they were, I didn't get up. Usually I'll do 25, wait a little bit, then do 25 more, or do 10 more, then 5 more. But because it was Veterans Day and I had the flag and there's 50 states, I thought I'd see how far I could go with 50 push-ups. And so I got them in, and we'll see how I feel tomorrow. I'll probably go back down to my 31 on day 66, but I'll keep working them up. I think it's great. I've had a lot of people email me and ask me how to, or decide that they're going to start. It's a great whole body exercise. So again, I encourage everybody to move, stretch, get mobile. Just getting down and up is a good thing. Think about that turkey trot. And again, I'd like to thank all our veterans for their service. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. I'd like to thank all the people that are my former students that are spreading the word. I'm very inspired and pleased, and couldn't be more proud of their progress. So keep it up, and I'll talk to you next week.